Hey everyone, Corey Poirier here. Just checking in before you listen to this new episode of the show to let you know that my new book, The Enlightened Passenger, is now officially available to order. And you can jump over to thisisthebook.com today. And just by grabbing a copy, you'll actually get 5 uber cool, I'm saying they're uber cool, you get to decide that, free bonuses with the book. They are all listed on the site, but as an example, one is how to land your brand to talk, so training around that. Another is access to my Get Paid to Speak book. Also, top 10 insights guide, a training that has never aired before that I revealed about how to charge what you're worth versus what you would normally maybe charge. And then an exclusive training by a friend of our show who's a really big name, and it's around the idea of how to build the life of your dreams and the business of your dreams. So actually, those are the bonuses. So head over to thisisthebook.com today, grab your bonuses before the pre-order ends and or before the bonuses go away. Thanks everybody for checking the show out. And until next time, I'm Corey Poirier.
Hello, everybody. It is Corey Poirier back with the latest edition of the show. Excited to have a first-time guest with me today. And so Monique Farmer, so excited to have you here today. And where we like to usually start, which is totally different, I know, than most shows, is we like to get the guests to tell us a little bit about themselves rather than me making up or reading a bio. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself just before we dive into the meatier things?
Sure, for sure. So I'm Monique Farmer. I am a PR communications expert based out of Omaha, Nebraska. We also do some marketing for some of our clients. It's comprehensive anymore nowadays. It's omnichannel, so you've got to be able to be dangerous enough in all of those segments. Been doing this for 23 years now, and I started my practice in August of 2019. I'm also in the classroom at this juncture just for one class, and it's asynchronous. I love to teach. I love to pour into the next generation of PR professionals. I am the proud wife of an Omaha fire captain and arson investigator for almost 23 years now, and mom of 3 and R&B 90s music lover. So that's me.
Wow. That's, there's a lot to, I can go in a lot of directions from there. That's amazing. So, sometimes call it a lot to unpack, but there is a lot to work with.
There's some different hats going on. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's the world we're in now anyway. Most of us are multi-passion, like say passionistas or passionites. But yeah, I think most of us these days wear multiple hats. And so I guess where I would like to go from there is to ask you, first and foremost, I guess more than anything, what brought you in this direction? Like, in other words, what was the catalyst? What was the thing that maybe led you down this path?
Which path? The one of becoming an entrepreneur?
Yeah, sorry, I should have clarified that because you said
I think just the journey that many of us go on, where you've been working in multiple settings, and I've worked in federal government, I've worked in corporate, I've led communication strategy for the largest school district in the state of Nebraska. I was a full time professor in the classroom for 3 years. I think I just got to a place where I needed and wanted a lot more freedom and flexibility. I've always worked on issues and crisis communications, really starting as part of my federal government days, working under Department of Defense because I was with Corps of Engineers, but leading like the media relations work for historic regional flooding and having a team of PR people come in from all over the nation to be under me at that time and keeping that organized for 5 months, which felt like 10 years at the time. But I've always worked like these schedules that are really 24/7, always have to be in front of my phone to be available for any media outlets. At the school district, it was 90 principals who all had my cell phone number and they used it every day. So I just got to a place where it's like, I really just need a lot more flexibility in my life. And entrepreneurship does offer you that, but it doesn't offer you shorter work days is what I think we both know, Corey, right? Like I'm still somehow always got my laptop, even in front of the TV, or sometimes I'm in the office, depending on, how much quiet I need. If I'm writing something, it might be till 11 o'clock at night, midnight. That's not all the time, but it is liberating to know that I can be present for my children. And if I need to just completely unplug and it's 7 o'clock at night, that I can do that and just stop and watch a movie because I'm the boss. I have clients who are really the bosses too, but there's still so much more flexibility than being in some of those environments I've worked in the past.
Well, and to that point, you know, when you talked about the media side and kind of being on board, I mean, I'd like to get your take on that in terms of, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that I think is a struggle for a lot of people when it comes to media, which is that, as you kind of alluded to, when it comes to stories, pitches, angles, you really, in a lot of ways, have to be at their mercy. You know, in other words, they could come to you and say, we need something filled, like a spot filled tomorrow at the time.
Tomorrow.
And if you don't, you're like, sorry, then they're just like, okay, we'll move on to the next one. And so I question that, and this is more to those people that are trying to live that life and trying to do that media. Do you have a recommendation for how people can do that while continuing to run the business that maybe they're trying to raise awareness on with the media? So like, what, how do you actually have a schedule where you run your business, but also still be able to be that flexible to the media? Like, can you give any advice for that?
Yes, a couple of potential perspectives. First and foremost, how do you get in front of them? I think when we start our businesses, we're under the mistaken impression that we're just going to do all of the things, right? Like, I'm going to do all of the things. We were, most of us, individual contributors to some extent. I've led teams for years, right? But I think because I never had the luxury to be just a specialist in any one area, I had to be a generalist, or I had to adapt quickly, or it's like, you know, the boss wants this done, the superintendent wants this done. Doesn't matter that you've never done it, figure it out. So I understand the power of having people that you can rely on and trust around you and on your team. So that'd be my first thing. If you've got people who can take some of that load off for you and that you trust with those relationships, have them help you with some of that or do some of that work for you, some of that pitching for you. The second recommendation that I have, and we learned this, I learned it as I was leading the media relations team for Missouri River Flood of 2011, blocking off the time. It is difficult to get a hold of the Army colonel that I need or the general that I need because they're being pulled in a million directions. So I just took time on their calendar from 1 to 5 p.m. on Thursdays. That's my media slot time. So that's when I'm going to plug in who we have, who wants access to you, for you to get on camera to talk about this thing, or for you to do this print interview so that we can talk about this thing. We don't want to lose those opportunities to get our story out there, especially in the midst of a crisis situation, right? And depending on what it is, because sometimes strategic silence is necessary during crisis situations. But for the proactive, positive storytelling that we want and need to do as professionals who are building a platform, or if we're building our business so that people can see what we're made of, what we can do for them, we do like to be able to take advantage of those opportunities when they come. So that means being available. And so I try for those very busy executives to have a slot on their calendar for that.
So interesting. I'm curious your thoughts then on the opposite scenario, which is if you block those times, let's say, and obviously there's exceptions to every rule, meaning, like, you know, just for lack of a better way of saying it, if Good Morning America calls, your ability to move your stuff around might be different than if Bob's podcast calls. And so, you know, and not to say anyone stronger, because you could actually have more of your ideal audience on Bob's podcast, but I just mean the bigger ones where you might move stuff around. But then you have a fixed, let's say, block time. My question was going to be, are there times, and I mean, I think it's an obvious probably question, but are there times whenever somebody says, well, it needs to be this time, but you blocked out a different time and you just can't make it work? And if so, what do you do? Do you try to find somebody else for them or recommend somebody else? Or do you just say, thanks for the opportunity?
It's a great question. So depending on what it is, because I'll be honest, there are some media opportunities that come that aren't really worth the time. I always ask, what's in it for us, right? Like, what's in it for us? when you're like me, I'm a first-time author. I finally got my ebook up. It should be available to people to start reading by this Thursday, which I think is the 28th. And maybe it's the 29th. It's the 29th. We're in a leap year. This Thursday, the 29th. But inside of an organization, I'm going to look for the next best person, a subject matter expert, highly likely someone that I've already media trained, either myself or brought in third party expertise, so that I know they're ready to roll. They know how to navigate a media interview. If I don't have a subject matter expert available, and we very much want and need to tell our story during a segment as the spokesperson, because I've always served in spokesperson roles. I know not all PR and communication or people are comfortable with that. Some just don't do it at all. I've always done it. So where I have been unable to book, for instance, my Army colonel or general or my superintendent of schools, then I will plug into that opportunity and serve as the voice for the organization. When we're talking about personalities and that publicity area, I've had people on my team who are trained. I have some accredited public relations people on my team, and we've had that happen, right? Like, we have talent booked, it's a concert, this media personality who has broad reach that we want to keep a good relationship with is like, where's your person? Then we just take it. That's what we're trained to do.
Wow. So one other question I want to ask that I didn't know that I would necessarily go down the media manhole is this much, but I mean that's obviously you spend a lot of time in there, and I think that's a very big interest area to people. But I wanted to ask you as well. I mean, there's so much that's shifted since new media has become a thing, and so one side is there's a lot more pay to play now.
Oh,
And
yeah.
something a person has to factor, which ones are a good investment, which ones make sense.
Yeah.
And there's an argument to be made that now you almost have to be willing to do some of it if you really want to capture a lot of media, because there's a lot of really big players now that that's the only way in. That's one thing. But then the second thing is what I find fascinating is when I say new media, I typically mean podcasting and
Yeah.
Facebook Live and stuff. And one thing I find fascinating is in new media, how much I'm going to say, I'll say it one of two ways, Monique, podcasters, how much they think they have control or how much they do have control. And when I say that, what I mean is it probably depends on the interviewee as to whether or not that podcaster has control. But what I'm driving at, it's fascinating to me to see people that want me on their show, or and I could reach out to them, it doesn't matter either way. And they want me to fill out 77 page documents, show up for three pre-interviews, and like just like a crazy amount of stuff just to do what one interview on a podcast, which I'm only taking at their word how many listeners they have. And what I'm getting at is the reason they have it, they wouldn't have that much control if most people weren't agreeing to doing that. And so I don't know your take on that, but that's been a struggle for me because I'll be quite transparent. There's so many podcasts.
Yeah, there's more than 100,000.
Yeah. Oh, well, like I don't know if you've heard the numbers from Listen Notes, but Listen Notes says there's almost 4 million now. So 2.5 million
That
active.
people listen to actively, I believe, more than
Well,
100,000.
I mean that's a fair point. Like in terms of actually listening to is different than having a podcast. But I mean that's my point too. So for me, other than like the big like Joe Rogan's, Jordan Harbinger's
Yeah.
really big show, I can get on most podcasts with a subject header of "Do you want a four-time TEDx speaker and Wall Street Journal USA Today best-selling author in your show?" And so for me, I have to think, do I want to fill out 77 page documents, send in my son to be stamped and sent back to me, and all this other stuff to get on a a 30 minute show where again I don't know even how big the listenership is? Do you think podcasters are doing a disservice when they do that, or do you think that should be expected? Because what they're trying to do is they're trying to have the show fully prepared and almost done before they ever get there. And me, I like organic, so to me it takes away from the
Yeah.
fluidity of it. But I'd love to get your talk take on that, because that's something I'm hearing a lot of people complain about now is how much work they have to do to be on a podcast.
Well, first and foremost, I've not run into that specifically where we've been asked to fill out a document that extensive to be on. But I guess what I would say is you made the point already to some extent. What is the listenership? What is it that you're after in terms of even booking talent with that podcast host on that show? And so I think about that first. There are ways to access the research to see the listenership. on podcasts before you invest the time. So I'd also recommend that. But third, I think that we have to also remember when we're doing PR, it's really just one piece of a larger comprehensive communications approach that should be wrapped around the PR, right? PR is tactical. To me, yeah, you can, if you get on Dr. Phil, you've got however many million people who watch Dr. Phil, right? Maybe it's 60 million. I don't know the number, but that's huge in terms of, oh, all those people saw you. But if it was just a one-time go and you're just a one-hit wonder, that's not going to get the amount of penetration that will lead you, I'm presumably, to the place and space that you want to be in, depending on what you're trying to achieve. If you're trying to become a well-known speaker for certain niche topics, I think we have to back up and think about what it is that we're really trying to do with the PR aspect of our comprehensive plans. And I think what I hear in your voice is that doesn't always happen with clients. And so I think we have to remind them that this is one potential opportunity. And sometimes those are life-changing opportunities. Who knows where they lead? But I've certainly heard authors say, well, I got that amount of reach from this one time I was on Good Morning America. I mean, I have friends who've been on like CNN for the 3-minute live talk backs, and no one will remember who they are because it was just one time, one moment in time for one topic.
Yeah, and I think to that point, and that's a whole probably we could have a whole full amount of time discussion just on how to leverage that thing, even whenever people don't remember you're on the show. You know, the idea of having both the CNN logo on your site and having that clip on your site that even if they never watch it, and there's a whole bunch of stuff we could deep dive there. I'll show you because this is what made me triggered me the question. This was a post I remembered from a guy, and I mean, when we're on video here too, so people can see this, and it's on his public page, so I don't mind sharing it. But Onyx Segal, who's got a really big following, he put, "Dear podcast host, when you send me a two-page instruction manual about how to show up on your podcast, I do not read it." And then you'll notice here there was 105 comments, which, by the way, I was one of them, I guess. And 387 people liked the post or clicked on it. So what I'm getting at is it kind of tells you, and I will save you the time to say when I read through that, a lot of people were saying certain versions of like, yeah, they get me to fill out 4 pages of online, like a report or whatever. I not report, but a Google Doc, a 4-page Google Doc, and I have to put in a unique bio they want me to type from scratch and 17 photos, like just asking you to jump through a lot of hoops. And or here and send me 20 questions. That was one I got recently. Send me 20 questions you want me to ask. And there's a point where you got to say, do I have enough time to invest
You
5 hours?
know what? I have to. That has always been the case with where we've. It doesn't matter where I've been and who I was supporting their communications work inside of a company. You build the better relationships with media people when you help them do some of their legwork. You become one of their go-to people. So I hear the gripes, but I think I've personally experienced in more than even that arena, in other arenas that have to do with business, these barriers where they feel like they're specifically designed to be hurdles so that only the cream rise through, right? So some of it, I wonder if it's some of that kind of game playing that is happening. I don't know. Their legal teams might be requiring that all of that stuff gets filled out. But to your point, Corey, if it frustrates most of those PR people who are doing proactive pitching, then they might just move on, and it leaves space for you to get to the top. So I think we have
Fair
to
enough.
think about it both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll shift away from that, but just to say that's something that I know. I just recently saw it, right? So it was a big dialogue. I was seeing people, and it was surprised me how many people are experiencing the same. However, having said that, I've been conservatively on, I don't know the exact number now, but I'm going to say conservatively somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 podcasts over the years. And I've had that happen like 10 times. So we're talking like less than 1%. I'm not saying it's normal. I just want to get your take on it as somebody that pitches. And to your point too, I think you always have to weigh the opportunity cost and opportunity loss. In other words, if I don't fill this out, was it a show that's big enough? And you can go on ListenNotes or other platforms and see, okay, this person's asking me to do all this and they're not even ranking. You know, so that means they probably have like 13 listeners and they're asking me to jump through that hoop. So, I mean, I just wanted to get your take because I know it's something people
There's
want.
another side though, because if you talk to the journalists and the podcasters, they're getting hundreds of pitches every day, all day. So I do wonder if some of that's to balance things out.
Probably is. And you know, there's this guy named Dr. Greg Reed, who worked with Napoleon Hill Foundation. He's done a lot of stuff in documentaries and that. And he told me that when somebody wants to work with him, he gives them like an instruction like, okay, show up at my house. Here's the address. Show up at 3:13 a.m. And I want you to have 20 cans of tomato juice. And I want you to show up and I want you to be wearing this. And to your point,
Oh,
he gets them to
wow.
jump through all these hoops because he feels his time is so valuable that if he goes into a partnership with somebody who's not willing to even do those, then he doesn't want to be
Yeah,
in that partnership.
not gonna be, yeah.
I agree with you. There's probably some of that. So to shift gears a bit as we wind down, I like to ask our guests two questions always. And thank you so much, by the way, for being so gracious on the media side, because that's an area we could go down that rabbit hole forever. But I think these are all valuable insights for people. And I'm going to ask you two quick questions, and then I'll probably circle back with one last media one. But two quick questions. One is, if you were sitting next to a passenger on a plane and they asked you for some life advice, what do you think you might tell them? Like if they leaned over and said, "Hey, I need some advice, what do you got?" What do you think you might tell a stranger on a plane?
That's a great question, and I've never been asked that. I love the way that it's crafted. I, at this juncture in my journey, would tell them to make sure that they take advantage of opportunities that are completely outside of their comfort zone. The ones that make them feel that visceral vacillation, like they're like just falling off of a roller coaster, that give them more than butterflies. Those things that scare us the most, but we still have this desire to be more, to achieve more, or we feel like we're not living up to what we were put here to do. Because I think so many people go through life humdrum, right? Like doing everything that they feel like they're expected to do, trying to please people that they don't even like, or not living the life that they really want to live. So I think the way that we can get out of that space is to intentionally get outside of our comfort zone. Because after a while, once you've done that, you've grown, you've stretched, just like when you go to the gym, you break that muscle all the way down to where those fibers are exhausted. Then you build it back up with protein and it's stronger than it was before you broke it down. And so I think just being unafraid to look fear in the face and go after those things and dreams that are deep inside of us.
Amazing. So, follow-up question, very, very similar, but just a slight tweak on it, which is I call it the time machine question. So, if you could jump into a time machine, go back and talk to a younger version of Monique and give her some life advice, what do you think you might tell her? And of course, the difference is this isn't a stranger on a plane. This is you knowing now.
This is me. I think that I would remind her to have balance, to have fun. I feel like I'm one of those people who's a constant goal setter, like did that, now it's time to do this, achieve that, now I need to achieve this next thing. I think, and this is just advice to myself, so I'm talking to myself even live while we have this discussion, Corey. I think for myself, I need to consistently remind myself to not only enjoy the journey, but celebrate the small wins and the big wins. I mean, there's been times when I got my second master's degree, I didn't even go to graduation. I didn't tell anybody because it was like the second time I had done it. It was like, okay, I'm done. You know, I was already close because I was taking classes just because. So I was like, well, let me just finish it. But I didn't stop to celebrate that achievement or celebrate myself. And so I am personally working on being better. I have a best friend who tells me all the time, because I'm sometimes like, oh, what if I'm the person who throws the party and no one comes? She's like, I'm there. I'm gonna be there. And the people who came, celebrate with them. And so that's what I would tell my younger self.
Amazing. Well, we're right down to like a minute, and I just wanted to ask you one last quick question followed by the question of how we can learn more. So maybe I'll put them both together. So I was just going to ask you a super quick question, just maybe your 30-second, 1-minute take on this. And I know it's a lot to ask in 30 seconds to 1 minute. And then, like I said, just maybe if you can tell us how people can connect with you to learn more. The question is, do we need a media one sheet? And if so, why?
So I'd say absolutely yes. I always have one for pretty much any and everything. I'm a big believer in having your key messages and talking points put together. That's a service that we offer to our clients pretty much for any communication that we're working on for them. I have one for my book. So I think it pays dividends to be prepared to deliver your key messages. I'm also a media trainer, right? And so instead of me going in front of a camera cold, and as the person who, you know, the local Channel 7 station would call and be like, such and such happened at the school, we'll be outside your office in 20 minutes. And I'd have to be ready to go. And so I always had like master messaging about the school district that I would look at quickly and get ready. And then again, as a media trainer, I could be ready to go outside and do that interview on camera in 20 minutes because I know how to navigate a media interview. But it's helpful to get those messages into your head so that you're able to deliver the narrative that you want the community to see, that you want the public to see, so they know about you from you instead of having that story written for you. And then I think the second part of your question was, how can people get in touch with me? They certainly can follow my LinkedIn. I'm out there daily. I'm sharing fun articles or just communicating with my community about topics of the day or sharing some inspirational quotes. And then also at avantsolutions.org, they can learn more about our PR services as well as about my book, Chart Your Path, which I mentioned the ebook will be out later this week, and then we'll move along, get some paperbacks and hard copies ready for people by April.
Amazing. I love it. Well, Monique, this has been an absolute pleasure. I so appreciate you. And I know you've delivered so much. So I wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And with your permission, I'll call it a to be continued. And then I'll say till next.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Corey. It was a pleasure.
Grab your copy of The Enlightened Passenger and the bonuses at thisisthebook.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.